Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, September 30th. We were going to do what you normally expect of us after a presidential debate, right? Compare the candidate statements on important policy items, and we will do that. If you were to just read a transcript of the debate, you could find a few examples of that. And those comparisons do matter a lot, and we'll get to some. But we also have to be real about what happened there in Cleveland last night. The biggest thing wasn't even policy. Trump kept saying he was the law and order president. Biden isn't for law and order. But then the president of the United States again declined when asked simply and directly by the moderator, Chris Wallace of Fox News, quote, "Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?" That was Chris Wallace's question. And the president replied like this.
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
You want to call him? What do you want to call him? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
white
militia.
Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right
Proud Boys.
Proud Boys,
stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem.
And on they went. Joe Biden then asserted that Trump's own FBI director, Christopher Wray, said Antifa is an ideology, not a group, and that white supremacist violence is the number one source of domestic terrorism in the United States today. Trump said, "You've got to be kidding me." So let's fact check. Here is FBI director Christopher Wray, member appointed by Trump after he fired Jim Comey, testifying before Congress just last month on Antifa.
We look at Antifa as more of an ideology or a movement than an organization.
And on white supremacist violence?
Within the domestic terrorism bucket category as a whole, racially motivated violent extremism is, I think, the biggest bucket within that larger group. And within the racially motivated violent extremist bucket, people ascribing to some kind of white supremacist type ideology is certainly the biggest chunk of that.
So we don't need the Washington Post and its Pinocchios or any of that. The fact that checked the president, Christopher Wray, his own FBI director, did it in advance. And we will start there as we welcome our first guest today, Jonathan Alter, author of three New York Times bestsellers, including, very relevant to this morning, The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies. Well, The Center was holding in 2013 anyway when that book came out. We'll talk about the idea of The Center Holding. Maybe you also know Jonathan's book, The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope. He is an NBC News and MSNBC political analyst, and he has a brand new book just out yesterday, relevant in its own way, called His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life. And we'll get to that. Hi, Jonathan. Congrats on the book, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
So, Jonathan, you had a virtual book event this morning, and I was struck by the way you invited people to it. You tweeted, "Looking to take a mental shower of decency this morning." So is that kind of what you wanted after last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons a lot of people stopped watching the debate is they had to take a shower. You know, it was so toxic. But the question is, what now? And clearly Biden will continue to debate. He's already announced that. But our democracy is in peril. This is not the flashing yellow light. It's code red. He indicated when he said to the Proud Boys, which are a violent white nationalist organization, stand by. That's like saying to stormtroopers, stand by to take the election and the law in your own hands. And when he says he will not abide by the election returns, believe him. This is the thing about autocrats and dictators and really one of the main lessons of history, which is if somebody says they want to kill you or hurt you or prevent you from exercising your rights, believe that person. He lies about everything except this. He knows he's very unlikely to win the election in a legitimate sense, so he's going to try to steal it.
And I want to come back to that a little later, but I don't want to lose the Proud Boys moment because I think it's also so central to democracy and just decency in this country. And I don't know if you saw this, Jonathan, or listeners, but the Proud Boys, a group, you know, as you described them, and also that calls itself Western Chauvinists, made it, what Trump said last night, into a logo and shoulder patches already, that phrase, stand down and stand by. And the leader of the group tweeted, "That's my president, standing by, sir." So there's not much ambiguity left after that, is there?
There really isn't. This reminds me, you know, I try to think of the historical analogies. And what happened last night was completely unprecedented in terms of presidential debates and American politics more broadly. But there are a couple of interesting precedents that came to mind. The first is George Wallace in 1963 saying segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And then he stood in the schoolhouse door to prevent integration, threw down the gauntlet. So this is what Trump has done. He is a racist president. There's no point in mincing words. That's, you know, something the American public is going to have to deal with. Now, here's where the more optimistic part of me comes in, and that's the second historical analogy, and that's from 1954 when they held the Army-McCarthy hearings, and when Senator Joseph McCarthy, who was, like Trump, a demagogue, who now we can't really imagine how anybody ever liked him, which, by the way, will happen with Trump eventually, when he started beating up on this innocent young lawyer, accusing him wrongly of being a communist, a senior lawyer named Joseph Welch interjected, "Have you no decency, sir? At long last, have you no sense of decency?" And I think the vast majority of Americans last night were Joseph Welch. We are all Joseph Welch. Mm. We've had it. We understand right. that this man has no decency and is a rotten human being. Those who don't are good Germans. They're people who will follow their fascistic leader wherever he goes, and then later on will try to explain to their family why, in the great moral test of their generation, they failed. And that's anybody, Brian, who is planning to vote for Donald Trump. They are out of rationalizations. Oh, he's good for my 401k. Oh, he's good for my, oh, he moved the embassy.
That's 40% of Jonathan. That's 40% of America, more or less.
It's a very, very large. It's a very large number of people, and that is what is the most disheartening part of this whole thing. We've known who Trump is. This is about the American people and how they'll respond. And so, to the people who are opposed to Trump, I would say this: it's time to stop wringing your hands and start ringing those call tools that they have to call and get out the vote in battleground states. And you can do that from any place in the United States. Well, because the only way to prevent a true constitutional crisis that will make our earlier constitutional crises look minor by comparison is a big, unambiguous victory for Joe Biden. If it's a close election, this country is in a lot of trouble.
And I hope the White House press corps and other media don't miss the big, obvious, gaping hole there in Trump's rhetoric. And I'm not sure everybody's going to focus on this as this, but I feel like people should, in addition to whatever else they focus on. He keeps calling himself the law and order candidate and the law and order president, but then he is encouraging or refusing to discourage white supremacist groups, militia organizations from bringing weapons into the streets. So how does that make you the law and order president? Now, Chris Wallace also challenged Biden in this area on the left-wing violence in Portland, which is real, but it again winds up with a spotlight on Trump's strategy toward groups like the Proud Boys. Listen.
You had never called for the leaders in Portland and in Oregon to call and bring in the National Guard and knock off 100 days of riots.
They can, in fact, take care of it if he just stay out of the way.
Oh, really?
Here's the thing.
I sent in the U.S. Marshal to get the killer of the young man in the middle of the street. They shot him. And for three days,
President Trump,
Portland wouldn't do anything. I had to send in the U.S. Marshals. They took care of business.
Go ahead, sir.
And by the way, you know, his own former spokesperson said, you know, riots and chaos and violence help his cause. That's what this is all about.
I don't know who said that.
I do.
Who?
Kellyanne Conway.
I don't think she said that.
She said that.
Want to fact check, folks, on that? Here's Kellyanne Conway on Fox and Friends last month.
That the more chaos and anarchy and vandalism and violence reigns, the better it is for the very clear choice on who's best on public safety and law and order.
Not much ambiguity there. Jonathan, your reaction?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, he's the chaos candidate, and that's what he always does, is he just drops a big stink bomb into any situation he's in. So now the burden for those of us who want to protect American democracy, and make no mistake, this is the most important election since 1864, when if Abraham Lincoln had lost to General McClellan, the Democrat, the United States would have ceased to exist. There would have been a negotiated settlement with the Confederacy, and we wouldn't have had a union. Okay, so that's how serious this is. And it's not just Trump that has to be beaten. The Republican Party has to be taught a lesson that there are certain guardrails in our democracy that are precious. So the burden on the Democrats and on the left in particular is not to hand Trump any tools, any weapons, any excuses. So like the demonstrators in Portland should take a break. If they want to go back and demonstrate in late November or December, have at it. But right now, everybody needs to focus and join arms on task one, which is removing this wretched human being from the presidency and mop up the stain on our democracy. And anything else is a distraction. And honestly, Brian, I include this big march on Washington that they're planning in a couple of weeks. To me, that's just a waste of time. Organizing that march, okay, fine. What are you doing? All of that energy should be going into calling undecided voters, getting out the Democratic vote so every person votes early in states where they can vote early. I'm not so sure that people should use mail-in ballots because in states where there is no early voting and you have a choice between an absentee mail-in ballot and voting on Election Day, I would encourage people to put a mask on and vote on Election Day because right now, it looks like there will be more Republicans voting on Election Day itself, and that could give Trump an excuse to declare victory and sow chaos. So it's really important. It is extraordinarily critical right now that people not do things that distract in the next 5 weeks from job one, not just for Democrats, not just for liberals, not just for people who don't like Donald Trump, but for our country. And, you know, I when I listen to myself, Brian, I'm normally a pretty calm guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I wrote a book called The Center Holds. Well, the center didn't hold. And now we have to piece it back together again. And we have an opportunity. And elections, as Trump said last night, elections do have consequences. A big Democratic victory will allow us to renew ourselves. Americans are great at that. Repair the breach in 2021. And we can do that.
To your point about voting at the polls, was this exchange, which starts with the moderator, Chris Wallace.
Will you urge your supporters to stay calm during this extended period, not to engage in any civil unrest? And will you pledge tonight that you will not declare victory until the election has been independently certified? President Trump, you go first.
I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully, because that's what has to happen.
What did you make of that?
Well, I mean, he won't say the most elemental thing in a democracy, which is to respect the election returns. And he won't say it. Doesn't matter how many times he's asked. He won't say it. So he is acting in a deeply un-American fashion. Doesn't matter how often he, you know, hugs the flag. He everything about his attitude right now is contrary to what our country is about. And elections are our most central, you know, small d democratic institution. And we fight for them all over the world. Jimmy Carter monitors elections in, you know, more than 100 countries, because that is the key to having freedom. And so he is basically saying he's just going to have his Proud Boys or his other people in there trying to challenge all of the Democratic voters they can to try to suppress the vote so that he can eke out a victory. And he must be stopped from doing that. And unfortunately, poll watchers in most states are tend to be seniors, and they are more vulnerable to COVID. So younger people need to step up. You can't be a poll watcher in a state you don't live in, but you should tell your friends in, you know, in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, Arizona, as well as, you know, there's some other states that are now battleground states. People should volunteer to be poll watchers. And instead of organizing marches and, you know, shouting outside Portland City Hall or whatever they're doing, they need to use the internet to save our democracy so that they can demonstrate next year. You know, if the Democrats don't win this election, there won't be any demonstrating before too long. And anybody who thinks that is alarmist has not been paying attention.
For people who didn't watch the debate, NPR did a little mashup of some of the crosstalk. This is like 30 seconds.
Folks, do you have any idea what this clown's doing? Why did you do it over? Because you weren't president screwing things up.
You were a senator.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
Hey, Joe, let me just the lowest or almost the lowest in your class. Don't ever use the word smart with me. Don't ever use that word.
Oh, give me a break.
Because you know what?
The question is,
Supreme Court Justice,
the
radical
question,
left.
Will you shut
who is
up,
on,
man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
You can laugh at it or you can cry or both at the same time. But Jonathan, I guess a question that I know one of my friends asked me is, did Biden descend to Trump's level by calling him a clown and telling him to shut up? Or was that strategy that may have worked in some way?
Well, I don't know if it was strategy, but "Will You Shut Up, Man" is already a T-shirt, and I thought it was good that he said it. You can't; it's impossible to descend to Trump's level. First of all, every time you think Trump has touched bottom, he crashes through the floor, right? So there is, it's a contradiction in terms to say that any person has descended to Trump's level, and so. No, and I don't think the audience got that impression. And the instant polls that were done showed that Biden overwhelmingly won the debate. But that's, you know, that in a normal year, that would be great. Oh, you know, this candidate won, this candidate lost. Okay, let's go on to the next debate. That's not what this is about. This is unfortunately, it's a street fight for our democracy. And it really is about running up the score, because if the score is close, we lose. And Trump has been very upfront that he wants Amy Coney Barrett on the court so she can cast the deciding vote if a disputed election goes to the Supreme Court. So while nominating her is constitutional, it's hypocritical, grossly hypocritical and sleazy, but it is constitutional. What is not constitutional would be for her to rule on an election that is already underway. So the focus of the Democrats, I think, in her hearings should be on forcing her to reverse her position and recuse herself, or no confirmation, and to put pressure on Mitt Romney, and they just need one other, because they already have Collins and Murkowski, who don't want this appointment before the election, one other Republican, Romney and one other, to say, I can only vote for confirmation if the nominee recuses herself from anything to do, any decision having to do with this election. And I think it's extraordinarily important that that debate now move in that direction. Everybody knows that she'll vote to reverse Roe versus Wade. There's, you don't have to beat that drum. On health care, I think Biden was good at the beginning of the debate in explaining that, you know, the Supreme Court is poised to take your protection from pre-existing condition, discrimination on pre-existing conditions, and that if Trump wins and you have diabetes, he's throwing you to the wolves. It's no more complicated than that.
One more for this segment. Tracy in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello, Tracy.
Hi. Vote. I really thought that Biden did very well. I'm going to turn off the radio now. Biden did a great job, and I think like that idea of turning off one mic. I'm looking forward to the vice president debate, the vice VP debate. There were great questions by the moderator, especially about white supremacists. We never got to the environment. There's a movie called Kiss the Ground, which talks about regenerative agriculture to sequester carbon. It ends plowing up the earth, and it ends pesticides. And Monsanto has been successfully sued for glyphosate, causes miscarriages, cancer. And we have to end fossil fuel, which never got discussed either, because we keep putting blankets around the earth with CO2, which causes...
And Tracy, just for the record, they did talk somewhat about global warming yesterday and fossil fuels in particular. And for your information and everybody's information, on Thursday, we're planning a segment specifically on Trump, Biden, and global warming. So that's coming up on Thursday as a focus in our 30 issues in 30 days presidential election series. But they did have a discrete section last night as well on the specific issue of climate change. Jonathan, to the previous caller's point about turning off a microphone, I mean, Chris Wallace did, you know, he was a stalwart last night in trying to enforce equal time and trying to put specific issue-oriented questions to both sides. But I was surprised that they set it up in the way that they did, with a lot of open debate structured into it, rather than you get 2 minutes for a first reply, then you get a minute for a response, et cetera, as they often do, because they must have known what was going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I actually think that they should cancel the next two debates. We've heard enough. We know that he never changes, and we have nothing else to learn from this process about their position on the issues. And he will roll over the other moderators. Chris Wallace, the toughest of the three of them. So I think they should have the vice presidential debate and call it a day. That they won't do that. At a minimum, they need to cut the mic of the person in the 2 minutes who is not speaking. I was glad that Chris Wallace got to climate change, but it reinforced for me the stakes of this election. So it's not just democracy that's on the line; it's the planet that's on the line, on the ballot. You know, and to me, one of the saddest, most tragic things that I learned in researching my book about Jimmy Carter is that he planned in a second term, if he had been reelected in 1980, to begin to address climate change, which was then called carbon pollution, you know, and it was known mostly to scientists. But Carter himself had gotten a report and was planning to take action on it in the early 1980s. And imagine where we would be if Jimmy Carter had been reelected in 1980 over Ronald Reagan, in a much better place. And so the only, you know, the reason I mention that beyond wanting to plug my book is that these elections, you know, for people who say, oh, it doesn't matter, they're all the same, I hate politics, they need to get a grip. These elections touch our lives in so many ways, often in ways that we don't think about and don't have time in our busy days to really understand. But
two quick things before you go
ahead,
as we are already over time. One is, My impulse is to disagree with you about canceling the next two presidential debates because there's nothing more to be learned, and think that that would be Biden or the Presidential Debate Commission kind of taking Trump's bait to walk away from another institution of our democracy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you're probably right, and so they can settle for just cutting the mics, but they can't set up a situation where they make no changes, and they can't wait for the Republicans to agree to the Commission on Presidential Debates changes. They just need to unilaterally say, we're cutting the mics, because one side has broken the rules and flouted the commission. And if they don't exercise their authority and get control of these next two debates, then that's really bad for the institution of presidential debates. It means they've been hijacked. So it's very important that the commission now reassert itself and not wait for the lawyers from the two parties to agree.
Jonathan Alter, whose previous books you may know about Obama and FDR. And Jonathan, thanks for doing such a bracing post-debate segment with us.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.